Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, and I have right here with me...
Colin Nixon.
And we are here to say, extraordinarily so in America, apparently in 2013, that Americans should have the right to vote. Now, you'd think we would have resolved this issue. You would think back in 1776, Americans could vote, at least white male Americans that own property. But you'd think that since the Civil War, or at least since the Civil Rights Movement, that African Americans would be allowed to vote, women would be allowed to vote, that there's even a constitutional amendment that says if you're 18 years or older, you have a right to vote. That came in the Vietnam War. So women can vote, and blacks can vote, and you do no discrimination on the basis of race or color, and you can vote if you're 18 or older, unless you live in Texas or North Carolina. Because
You can vote in theory. You can't actually vote.
What Gar and I want to talk about today, and I'm going to focus on Texas, and he's going to focus on North Carolina. But really, the problems are one and the same. We want to talk about the real practical barriers that the Republicans in those two states are putting in front of people who would otherwise vote, mostly the very young, the very elderly, African-Americans, Latinos. Those are the ones, and poor people, frankly, poor white people as well, are all getting the shaft, and we're going to talk about how that works. Garland, you're going to talk about North Carolina, same thing there.
Yeah, and it is really, it's all one conversation. You know, there are a few, you know, odds and ends differences. North Carolina has been able to put through the most draconian voter suppression law since, you know, Jim Crow era.
I don't know, because the League of Women Voters...
Apparently we were wrong.
Well, the League of Women Voters calls the Texas plan the most extreme example of racial gerrymandering. So, you know, we may have an argument about who's worse, Texas or North Carolina today. But they're both pretty bad. So let me start with Texas, then you'll move on to North Carolina, and we'll mix them all in together. So Texas has two plans, actually. One is a voter ID law, and the other is a racial gerrymandering plan. Since North Carolina is more like the voter ID law, let me start with the racial gerrymandering. Because what Texas is doing, and frankly, this is nothing new. Florida has done it. North Carolina has done it. Georgia has done it. If you look at these states and you look at their district maps, you will see there's always one crazy district. In Texas, it goes from east of Dallas to west of Fort Worth. In Florida, you can find it snakes all the way down from Orlando to Gainesville. These districts tend to cover hundreds of miles, and Florida actually goes out in the ocean for a couple hundred miles. And what they do is they tend to be 95% black or Latino. And that's hard to do. And sometimes you have to, you know, split up streets and neighborhoods and so forth, and they snake down and they go hundreds of miles. And the purpose of making a district 95% black or Latino is because blacks and Latinos are very loyal to the Democratic Party. And the idea is if you grab all these voters and stick them in one district, sure, they're going to elect one representative. But there'll be many, many more districts that can elect white Republican representatives. And so in Texas, for example, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, a majority of the population is non-white. And yet in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there are five congressional districts. Four of them have a white majority, and one of them is almost entirely black and Latino. That has been replicated all across the state of Texas. In Texas, it used to be that 52% of Texas was white in the last census of 2000. In the 2010 census, only 45% of Texas is white. But that doesn't mean that white people are giving up easily, because they now have 70% of their congressional districts are majority white. I want you to think about this. 45% of the state population is white, but 70% of the districts are white, and you might majority white. And you might say, how do you do that? Well, the answer is, of course, you draw the lines carefully. You resegregate Texas. Brown versus Board of Education, forget that. We're going to draw lines, put even if we have to draw them very snakily and weirdly and very strange lines, and put all the blacks and Latinos together in one district, and so they'll have 100% or so in that district, or 95%. And then the districts that would otherwise be 45% white become 55 or 60% white, and that's enough to ensure Republican control of Texas for a very long time. Last thing on the gerrymandering, I'll give you a chance to speak on that, Colin, is that the population that it's grown in Texas from 2000 to 2010, 90% of it is non-white, either black or Latino or Asian. It's non-white. 10% of it is white. And yet, even though the majority, 90% of the growth is to non-whites, and Texas got four congressional seats because of it, they're going to subtract one congressional seat that would otherwise go to blacks and Latinos. So in other words, 90% of the growth went to blacks and Latinos. They got four new congressional seats, and the Republicans could take those four and one more so that they actually lose representation. This is, of course, contrary to the spirit and law and intent of the Voting Rights Act, even the part of it that still exists, and good for Attorney General Eric Holder. He's going to challenge it. So just on the racial gerrymandering, we're going to get to the voter ID in a second, Gron. Just on racial gerrymandering, speak forth and give us your wisdom.
Well, there's a couple things. You know, when you hear the, you know, overwhelming numbers here where, you know, there are many more people of color than there are people who aren't of color, you start thinking about, you know, South Africa, for goodness sake. You know, you start thinking about people basically saying the minority should rule and we can administratively just keep adjusting the rules. As long as we have some level of power, before we lose it, we'll change the rules so we keep power, so we will have, you know, total and complete minority rule. And I think that's the plan for Texas. I think that's the long-term plan for America, and they're doing it, you know, one state at a time. I think it's a short, very, very, they have a short vision here, because within 10 to 12 years, they won't even be able to do that anymore, number one. And number two, the people that they did it to will be really pissed.
Yeah, there's an old expression, if you can't beat them, join them, which suggests that Republicans have not been winning national elections because they've been very much freezing out blacks and Latinos, but not just them, poor people, students, the elderly. They've been freezing out these voters. The Republicans have apparently decided if they won't join us, we'll beat them. The exact opposite. In other words, if these people won't vote for us, we'll just take away their right to vote, which is one way of solving the problem. But as you point out, Garland, it's ultimately self-destructive.
Right, and it's pretty simple. Your policies are less popular than the policies of the other side. What you need to do is have as few people as possible vote. If your policies are unpopular, the more people that vote, the more likely you are to lose. And so the Republicans, it's not about the Republicans, and they try to, you know, make it about race and about a lot of different things. It's not about the Republicans. It's not about race. It's not even about age. It's not about culture. It's about policies. Their policies are unpopular, and they have to do everything they can to try to institute unpopular policies. And I think the Republicans are trying to find a way. Ultimately, it's about morals, and this is what I think. The Republicans feel that their policies are so morally superior that it justifies the means. It justifies this chicanery. It justifies all of the crooked, shiesty things they're doing, because ultimately, in the end, Mark, you must understand that their policies are so morally superior to ours on the left that they'll be doing the right thing anyway. That's what you and I don't actually get, Mark.
Well, let me give you a few more
inferiority of our political and ideological positions.
I guess. Let me give you a few more of these crooked gerrymandering policies, because at some point they actually get amusing in a weird, perverse way. Okay, one of the things that Texas is doing is they are carefully removing any economic engines from these African-American districts. So what they're doing is, at first, they're corralling, they're ghettoing, really, putting in ghettos, district ghettos, blacks and Latino voters, all drawing a line to put them all in one ghetto. But they're removing from, a lot of times you find, for example, stadiums tend to be in poorer areas, tend to be in African-American areas. So they're removing the stadiums. They're removing the Astrodome. They're removing the medical center. They're removing Houston Baptist University, all the economic engines of the district that would otherwise support the district and support, frankly, the member of Congress who is representing that district. And they've gone further than that. They're actually drawing very careful lines to come in where they take the white area, and then they draw a line all the way down the street, and they grab the district offices of the current Democratic members of Congress, and they throw those in another district, and now they're taking their homes. They're taking the homes, for example, Eddie Bernice Johnson. She's still the head of Congressional Black Caucus. She was for many years.
I'm not sure.
I don't know if she still is, but she was for many years the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, wonderful congresswoman from Texas. They went in. She's been there for, I don't know, 20 years, a very long time. They went in, they grabbed her home, and they put it in an all-white district, and then the rest of it. So now she's got to move to represent the area that she's been representing for decades. It's so obvious that the Republicans sent emails to each other and they said, well, this obviously won't pass the Voting Rights Act. Clearly, this is racially discriminatory. We've got to be careful about this. And then another Republican sends an email back saying, don't say that in writing. It'll be used against us in court. So what happens? It was used against them in court. There was a federal action. Texas decided there's no way they're getting this past Attorney General Eric Holder, so they can go to they're going to court. And a lot of people don't know this, but even on the old preclearance standards under the Voting Rights Act, there were always two ways to clear. One was through the Attorney General. That's the one most people focus on. But you could always go to a three-district panel of the federal court. And the federal court that decided is the D.C. District Court, which is, by the way, a conservative court. It's been packed with conservatives, and the Republicans in the Senate until recently have not allowed President Obama to appoint new people to the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is a lot of times considered the second most important court after the United States Supreme Court. In any case, so federal judges, two panels of three federal judges looked at Texas laws, one at the voting ID laws, which we'll get to in a minute, and one at this racial gerrymandering law. And the people that looked at the racial gerrymandering law, it was a three-judge panel, two of which were appointed by George W. Bush, of course, the former governor of Texas and Republicans. And all three judges unanimously concluded not just that Texas laws had the effect of racial discrimination, but that Texas was intentionally discriminating. You know how hard it is to get Republicans to agree that Texas was intentionally discriminating on the basis of race? You have George Bush's judges calling Texas racist because they said in a footnote, the evidence is so overwhelming that we don't even have to document it all in the opinion. This is enough to document it. There's a lot more evidence that we're not mentioning here. That's a very, very strong statement, and it didn't come from Attorney General Eric Holder. It came from the Texas courts. And one more thing, I got to give a program note for those that are listening in. I'm going to be on Fox at 1:30 today, Eastern Time, so about an hour and 20 minutes, making that very point. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to me.
Yeah, Mark, the thing about it is there's one thing that's clear, and that is now that the Republican Party has taken a lunge to the right, they've taken a lunge back towards Jim Crow. They are desperate. They are a wounded animal. They know they're in deep and serious trouble, and they see the way things are going. And they believe that they've got to do whatever is necessary. They want to maintain power by any means necessary. And so what we're looking at now is the reality of who these people are. This is clearly, I mean, it's hard to argue that this is not Jim Crow, that these are not Jim Crow laws. And, you know, the other thing about it is this that I think we should pay a little bit of attention to. In the past, one of the arguments in the South that for instance, when African Americans would say, well, you know, we don't like we are offended by the Confederate flag, they'd say that's part of the Southern heritage, which meant Southern heritage means white people, not black people in the South. That always meant the white Southern heritage, with the black people aren't considered part of it.
Yeah, I don't know too many black Southerners that fly the Dixie flag.
Right. Well, the other day, Rick Perry is arguing because Eric Holder is challenging, specifically saying that they're intentionally racially discriminating in Texas and challenging some of their newest laws. And Rick Perry was making the point that Eric Holder was going against the political views of the Texans. He was fighting against what the Texas people wanted, what the Texas people had spoken as to what laws they wanted, and Eric Holder was going against it, and this was un-American. And the first thing I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. There are more people of color in Texas than not.
That's true.
And they're pretty much not too thrilled with this stuff.
That's true.
So when you say,
The people of Texas, he means the white people of Texas.
Yes, when you say, sorry, I got a little bit distracted for a second. But when he says the people of Texas, he's going back to the old, only the white people in the South count.
That's right.
Only what they want count. Yeah, there are more people against it, but they're not the, quote, people of Texas. They're those, then, kind of other people that don't count. So how dare you go against the, quote, people of Texas. And so we are back, and I think we need to start saying it. We are back to the Jim Crow era. And that's what we're doing now. We're literally fighting Jim Crow laws in America in 2013.
We are. And, of course, the United States Supreme Court is doing its best to help those Jim Crow laws come to pass. So most of you know the United States Supreme Court just not that long ago, what, 3 weeks ago maybe, declared that one aspect of the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional. So let's give some background here. The Voting Rights Act, there's basically two pillars, two legislative pillars of the civil rights movement, two main laws that changed everything in America for African Americans that date from the 1960s. One is the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That's the one that says that blacks can use hotels and water fountains and movie theaters and restaurants and all the ways that the white South tried to keep blacks segregated. That's gone. That's still thankfully in place. God knows how long it'll last. People like Rand Paul oppose that. But the other, and I would argue, maybe even equally important, because the right to vote is the foundation upon which all other rights reside, was the Civil Rights Act of 1965, which says that you cannot use these discriminatory tests to keep people from voting. Now, at the time, in the 1960s, they would use things like literacy tests. They'd require blacks and only blacks to read the Constitution, and if they can't explain what habeas corpus is, they wouldn't get a chance to vote. Of course, whites who couldn't explain habeas corpus...
Guess or the number of jelly beans in a jar. That was always a good one.
That is a good one. If you couldn't name it, and of course, whites didn't have to do these tests because if their grandfathers could vote, this dates back to the early 20th century, 1905, 1910, if their grandfathers could vote, then they could still vote, and that's where we get the idea of grandfather clauses that people still use today. I'm always amazed, Garland, by how many people use today grandfather clauses with no earthly idea what they originally meant. Today we think of grandfather clauses as you have a law and you're grandfathered in. That means that if you change a law, the old way of going through for the people that were following the old way still keeps to go. Like if you have a zoning law and you got a house in the middle of an industrial zone, and they say, well, today it's going to be industrial zone, but we're grandfathering in that old residential house. We're going to let them go the old way. And today it's used to mean something very harmless like that. Of course, the original use of the word grandfather clause was that we're going to let those whites whose grandfathers could vote continue to vote without undergoing this battery of tests we're going to use to keep people from voting. So grandfather clause was originally an extremely racist, specifically racist idea. And every time I hear the word grandfathering, I always think to myself, does that person know where that term came from?
But doesn't that kind of work like if your father or grandfather went to a given university, that you get priority as to who gets in the university?
There you go.
It's the same thing, isn't it, Mark?
It's exactly the same thing. So, in any case, so the Civil Rights Act of 1965 passed. And what that act did is it said you can't use these tests for voting. And there was an additional thing, by the way. There was a constitutional amendment, one that Republicans don't often talk about, 24th Amendment to the Constitution, that specifically says that you can't have a poll tax. Now, what southern states did is they required people to pay a tax to attend the polls. And sometimes it'd be a very low tax. In the 1960s, it was $1.50. But if you're dirt poor, you can't pay $1.50. And some of the states, Mississippi and Alabama, I know did this, said not only if you want to vote, do you have to pay the current poll tax, but you have to pay all your back poll taxes. So you have to pay for the last 20 elections that you missed because you couldn't afford it. You have to pay $30, $40, $50, $100, $200. And that would keep largely poor blacks from voting. I'm not sure how much they enforce the poll tax against white Southerners.
What they did was they applied it unequally. Even where there wasn't a difference, they simply, when the whites came to the polls, they let them vote, and when the blacks came to the polls, they said, you know, it came down to an end user kind of thing.
Right.
So that even if the law, if the black people in a given area could, in fact, meet the requirements of the law, they would simply say, well, you haven't met the requirements of the law, and you can't vote. Get out of here, or we'll lynch you.
Right, because even the blacks that could cite what the habeas corpus was and pay their poll tax, then they'd come up with the jelly bean jar, something, you know, absolutely impossible for them to do. And of course, there was something like 2% of all blacks were registered in Mississippi, a state that's 35 or so percent black, as recently as the 1960s. All right, so Civil Rights Act changes all of this. It gets rid of all, what's that?
Well, actually, it was Civil Rights and the Voting Rights Act.
Well, excuse me, the Voting Rights Act. You're absolutely right. The Voting Rights Act of 1965. I want to be very clear. You're right. The Civil Rights Act is the 64 Act. That's the one that stops segregation. The Voting Rights Act of 1965, you're absolutely right, Garland, changes everything. And what it does is
how about if we say that's the one that outlawed segregation? Didn't actually stop it.
Fair enough. It outlawed it. All right. Fair enough. And the Voting Rights Act outlawed discriminatory voting tests. But didn't necessarily stop it, as we're about to see. All right. So the way it works is this. There's several sections to the Voting Rights Act. The most commonly used until 3 weeks ago were Section 4 and Section 5. So Section 5 was the part that said you have to get preclearance by the Attorney General or a court. They have to say that you haven't discriminated before you can put in changes in voting laws. And Section 4 gave a list of those states that have historically not allowed blacks to vote. They're exactly what you would think of: Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, North Carolina, Arkansas. But it may surprise you that at one time Manhattan was on that list. At one time Arizona was on that list. So it's not exclusively the South.
Was New Hampshire on the list at one time?
At one time New Hampshire was on the list. But you could get off the list. The I hate to call it a blacklist, because that let's just call it the racist list. You could get it off the racist list if you had 10 years and you never tried to change your voting in any way that was discriminatory. Boom, you're off the list. Well, Texas never got off the list. In fact, Texas has had more enforcement suits under this Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act than any other state in the United States, which is why I claim Texas is worse than North Carolina, but we'll get to that argument in just a second. Texas is the worst for enforcement, although, to be fair, Shelby County, Alabama, the same county that sued in the Supreme Court 3 weeks ago to end the list, that horrible racist list, they had 240 separate instances, 240 separate instances of trying to pass voting discrimination laws that failed. So,
and that in itself, Mark, that is clear evidence that the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act was unnecessary.
Well, that's what Chief Justice Roberts argued, right? It was no longer necessary. All right. So, and we'll get to what he ruled in just a second. Well, I'll tell you what he ruled. Let's get to it. So Chief Justice Roberts, five justices of the Supreme Court ruled, and four, by the way, dissented and completely agreed that it was constitutional. And to be fair to the four dissenters, the 14th and 15th Amendment to the Constitutions specifically says Congress shall have the authority to enforce this legislation. For example, the 15th Amendment says you can't discriminate on the basis of race or color. Section 2 of the 15th Amendment, the part that no one ever reads, says that Congress shall have the authority to enforce this through appropriate legislation. So Congress did exactly that with the Voting Rights Act. It was first approved in 1965, but it was reapproved. It was reauthorized year after year after year in 1970, in 1980, most recently in 2006, with a unanimous vote of the Senate and more than 90% of the House voting for it. And it says, like I said, Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. The United States Supreme Court said, nope, five justices, five guys in black robes, and they were all men, five guys in black robes said, you know what, sorry, we're not going to let you apply the Constitution as it's written, because it seems unfair to single out racist places like Shelby County, Alabama, and racist states like Texas just because they're racist. And they said, you haven't updated your formula since the 1960s. The formula's the 1960s, by the way, were to determine what states didn't have even 50% voting. Guess what? To this day, this is again why I think Texas can be worse than North Carolina, I looked up the voting percentage, and there's only four states in the United States that have less than 50% of voters eligible to vote voting, and one of them is Texas. And I looked up the states that for people who have voting age voting, and Texas is the 49th state. Only 41% of people who would otherwise be eligible to vote in Texas can vote. So it's they're way down there.
Well, you know what's interesting? So what's kind of I would use the word funny, but certainly that wouldn't be the appropriate term about that is, one of the things they argued was that because there hadn't been a lot of discrimination, it wasn't needed anymore.
Right.
And that they were using old data. Isn't that kind of like a serial killer who's been in jail for 20 years and says, look, you need to let me out because I haven't killed anybody in 20 years. And when they say, yeah, but the last time you were out, you killed a lot of people, you're using old data. It's 20 years old.
There you go.
The only reason that you haven't killed him is because you've been in jail.
Or you can listen to Justice Ginsburg's analogy in the dissent, which I like very much. She said that ending the Voting Rights Act now, because it's been so successful, is like putting away an umbrella while it's still raining, because while you had the umbrella up, you weren't getting wet.
Yeah, but the reality is we should honestly discuss the reality of it. And the reality is this. They didn't get rid of it because there was no discrimination. They got rid of it because it was preventing them from discriminating
right.
Today has its, and you know, if you remember, Mark, I said time and again on the show, the instant that it is gone, they will go about proving why it was needed, and they will go about proving that the only reason they wanted it out of the way was because it stopped them from discriminating.
And that's exactly what Texas and North Carolina have done within, I think it was, what, an hour of the Supreme Court decision. Texas reinstituted the exact same unconstitutional voting rights restrictions, both in gerrymandering and voting ID, which we'll get to in just a second, that have been struck down by these federal courts. They put them back in. But there are a few other sections to the Voting Rights Act. And Republicans said, hey, it doesn't matter that the Supreme Court has struck down Section 4 and nullified Section 5, because there's still Sections 2 and 3. Sections 2 allows any person who's been discriminated against in voting to file suit, and after, you know, the 6 months or a year it takes to go through the courts, and maybe another year to go through the appellate courts, you can find a practice unconstitutional. All right, that has some use, but of course it's after the fact rather than before the fact. But there's also Section 3, something that was almost never used because it wasn't necessary before. But Section 3 allows the Attorney General of the United States to go and say, hey, Texas is discriminating, North Carolina is discriminating, and we want to add them in. In other words, people could bail out if they weren't discriminating under Section 4 and Section 5, but you can also bail in. You can say, you are actively racist. We need to watch you. You need to be pre-cleared because you're actively being racist. This is exactly what Attorney General Eric Holder is doing in Texas. I suspect he's going to do it in North Carolina very soon, and the right wing is up in arms.
Well, out there, he should have the unmitigated gall to go against the will of the minority in Texas to oppress the majority and stop them from voting. That's kind of un-American, isn't it, Mark?
Apparently, democracy is un-American to the Republicans. So yeah. Let's move on and talk about these ID laws, because that's where Texas and North Carolina have a lot in common. Although North Carolina did its own gerrymandering plan, it's just it's a couple years old. Why don't you start and tell me about North Carolina's ID law?
North Carolina, okay, they passed some voter suppression laws, and let me give you part of the list. Okay, some of the things that they've done. So they didn't just say, well, we're just going to require voter ID. They did a number of things that would simply make it harder for people to vote who don't traditionally vote right wing. Here's a brief list of some of them. The end of pre-registration for 16 and 17 year olds. So you can't register before you're 18. You got to wait till the day.
Let me just say that. I mean, just briefly, the harm from that is unimaginable. Obviously, if you're 16 or 17 and you're pre-registering, you can't vote on election day until you're 18. But it allows you to come in if you're 17 years and 6 months, you know, and you're going to be 18 by election day. You go in, you pre-register when you're at home, and you can go through all the hoops they want you to jump through. There's absolutely no harm in it unless you're trying to prevent young people from voting. Go ahead, Gon.
And I'm sure they're probably going to require a voter registration card. And it's going to take, like, you know, 18 months
to get that card. Yeah, what do you do if your 18th birthday is election day? I guess you just can't vote.
Right.
Which violates, again, the Constitution, which says that you can't discriminate against people 18 years or older. Go ahead, give me another one.
A ban on paid voter registration drives.
Nice.
Elimination of same-day voter registration. A provision allowing voters to be challenged by any registered voter of the county in which they vote rather than just their precinct. They took a week off of early voting, elimination of straight party ticket voting, a provision making the state's presidential primary date a function of the primary date in South Carolina, a provision calling for a study rather than a mandate of electronic candidate filing. They increased the maximum campaign contributions from $4,000 to $5,000.
Well, you know, because money matters more than people. Listen, the main difference between Republicans and Democrats is this. Democrats believe in one person, one vote. Republicans believe in $1, one vote. So since, and corporations are people in their minds, they believe that we need to increase the money in politics and remove the American people from democracy.
The repeal of the disclosure requirements under candidate-specific communication, so you don't have to say that I authorize this or whatever.
That allows for really dirty ads.
The repeal of three public financing programs. New limits on who can assist a voter adjudicated to be incompetent by court, because you wouldn't want incompetent voters to be helped by anyone, certainly.
Right. someone who's blind or deaf or has trouble, you know, getting, you know, seeing the ballot form. You don't want anyone, you want them to have a chance to actually vote.
Yeah, because this person may actually be receiving money from social programs. So, gee, which way would they? Well, anyway, a provision, making it more difficult to add satellite polling places for the elderly voters or voters with disabilities. Those darn elderly voters who are getting Medicare and Social Security and disabled people. Elimination of flexibility in opening early voting sites at different hours within a county. They also made it there. They've also passed a law that stops the polling sites from staying open an hour or two late when they're long lines.
Oh, my God. So basically, they're making it really, really hard for you to vote, unless you're rich and unemployed, and then you can do whatever you want. But if you have a job and you've got to get there after work, and then you end up in a long line because everyone's trying to vote, you just lose your right to vote. And they end the early voting, and they end the same-day registration. This is all about making it harder to vote. It's all about saying that you have to go through a lot of hoops, a lot of jumps. Voting is not a right. It's a game. And if you don't get every little detail right in the game, you lose the game. Sorry, you lose your right to vote.
But only for certain people.
Explain how that works.
Well, basically, the director of a Southern Coalition for Social Justice said, and she's also the former Deputy Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights in the Clinton administration, said we'll see long lines, many citizens turned away, not allowed to vote. More provisional ballots cast, but many fewer counting. Vigilante observers at the polling place, and all disproportionately impacting black voters.
That's the other thing. The vigilantes at the polling place.
IDs also.
Yeah, and we'll get to voter ID in just a second. But that's the other thing. Vigilantes at the polling place. People going in and saying, you can't vote. Prove that you can vote. Sometimes we have elderly voters. There's a woman in Texas that I was going to talk about who was given birth by a midwife. And who's all because they were too poor to go to hospitals, and she's a black woman, and they didn't have a lot of blacks in hospitals in Texas 70, 80 years ago because they weren't allowed to go into them. The only proof of her birth is the fact that, number one, she exists, and number two, it's recorded in the family Bible, neither of which is accepted by Texas as ID. So even though she's been voting for 30 or 40 years, we're going to remove this clear American citizen from the voting rolls who just happens to be poor, elderly, and black.
I'm surprised they didn't. I'm surprised they didn't try to argue that she was born in Kenya.
Well, you know what? Maybe she was. Maybe this was all part of the conspiracy. I don't know.
The question is where is this going to go? You know, something dawned on me the other day, and that is, imagine the uproar. Let's just go step out a little further and say Hillary Clinton won.
Yeah.
And as a result, she wins. Wins the election by 10 million votes. The first woman ever to run, the first woman ever to win, and she loses the election because of gerrymandering.
There you go.
Because of laws that have been changed so that when she wins the state, the Republican actually, who loses by 10 points, actually gets more electoral votes.
By the way, you're not on a speakerphone, are you, girl?
Yeah.
Get off the speakerphone. It's making terrible sounds.
Okay.
Much better. Thank you. Continue.
And I just thought, what's going to happen here in 2014 and 2016 as a result of these things? I mean, I'm really concerned that we could see some terrible things happen. And as a result, I would imagine, it is my belief, I mean, to every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. If the Republicans are as successful as they would like to be at hijacking the vote, that there would be some significant social unrest, shall we say.
Oh, I think so. We really didn't see it a lot after Bush v. Gore. I think because Americans were surprised that the Supreme Court would just steal an election, would just declare, even though Gore won the election, even though he won it nationally, even though he won it in Florida, they would just say Bush wins. And I think it stunned them. It took them by surprise, as coups often do, and people don't have time to react. But I don't think if they do it again, I don't know they won't have time to react. People are already marching. It's time to go back to the Pettus Bridge in Shelby, Alabama. It's time to go back and take to the streets of Texas. Let me tell you about Texas ID law, Garland, because you gave me North Carolina's, and you make a very good case for it being the worst in the nation. You may be right, but let's talk about Texas here. So Texas is saying that you cannot use government ID unless it's a driver's license, You cannot use it to vote. You can use a driver's license, you can use a concealed gun license, and you can use a military license. But you can't use a student ID. You can't use, if you work for a post office, that's a government ID. If you work for the city of Fort Worth or the state, sorry, that's not good enough. You have to have a gun license. If you want to get this driver's license, all right, what you have to do, depending on where you live, is you have to go 100 to 125 miles, so that's 200, 250 miles round trip. Now, think about it. You don't have a driver's license, you don't own a car, and there's not a lot of public transportation in Texas. But to get your right to vote, you've got to somehow, hitchhike, I guess? 200 to 250 miles. When you get there, you have to pay $22 minimum, and that's to get the certified birth certificate, and then you have to wait for that to come in, and then you use that to get your driver's license. So as far as I'm concerned, that's a poll tax. It's contrary to the 24th Amendment. And the reason for all of these things is to prevent what the Republicans call voting fraud. But it's a very specific kind of voting fraud. This is really important to point out. There are lots of ways to commit voting fraud. You can register someone falsely. You can lie in an absentee ballot. You can fill out several absentee ballots and stick them in the mail. And it turns out that there's hundreds of cases in Texas in the last decade of absentee ballot fraud. There's hundreds of cases of registration fraud. By the way, neither of these, a photo voter ID would prevent. It's not going to prevent absentee ballots because no one looks at you, right? It's not going to prevent registration fraud. You can still do that. The only thing it prevents is in-person voting fraud. So the Texas courts looked at this and they said, how many cases does Texas have since 2000? Well, according to the Texas courts, it's zero. There's not a single case. Now, according to the Texas Attorney General, who's been fighting for these bills, a guy by the name of Abbott insists that there were two. So let's give Abbott his due. Let's assume there were actually two cases of in-person voting fraud in the last 13 years in Texas. We don't know, by the way, whether they were convicted or not, but let's say they were convicted. Let's assume two crazy people walked in and pretended to be someone else and were convicted. For those two people, they are going to disenfranchise between 600,000 and 2.3 million Texans. Millions of Texans will lose their right to vote because two idiots decided to go in, maybe at maximum two idiots, zero to two idiots, decided to get to do in-person voting fraud for which they're getting 5 years in prison.
Well, you know what this reminds me of, Mark? This is the equivalent of when Rick Santorum said something about, he doesn't want to see black people, see his white constituents' money go to black people so they'll live better. And they ask him.
I think he said blah people. Did he say blah people?
I said blah people. What he basically was saying was, leave me alone. Everybody knows what I said, but I could care less. I'm not answering you. So what they're doing here is the same. It's the equivalent of saying, we're passing these laws so that people will stop getting trampled by unicorns. Because, trampling by unicorns is a problem. That's why we're passing the laws. It's not even worth the level of discussion because it's obvious that it is, it is just a fraudulent argument. You're making an argument so absurd and so non-existent that it's a joke to even really discuss it as if it were a proper argument. So that's what I think. It's the equivalent. They might as well have said we're going to try to stop all these deaths by unicorn trampling. There are herds of unicorns that are trampling people at the voting booth, and these laws will stop these deaths. But nobody's ever seen a unicorn. Yeah, but one could appear. And if it did,
it would trample people. You didn't go back to that speakerphone, did you, Garland?
No, I didn't, but something weird's going on.
There is some kind of sound problem, but I'll try to, maybe it's on my end. So I apologize for that. Anyway, one of the reasons you know that what Texas is trying to do is absolutely intentional, and of course this is what the courts found, is that the Democrats in the legislature, what few are left, what a few are allowed to be there, did try to amend the bill to make it constitutional. For example, they put in the amendment travel reimbursement costs. If you've got to travel 200 miles to get the right to vote, then if there's a Greyhound bus, you just prove that you went there on your way to vote, and you get your reimbursement costs rejected by the Texas legislature. The Democrats said, all right, how about we'll waive the $22? You know, there should be no poll tax. There's an amendment to the Constitution that prohibits poll taxes. All right. So the $22 to get your certified birth certificate so you can vote, we're going to waive that. Nope. Voted down. The Texas Democrats said, okay, how about allowing student ID or government issued ID, things like your Medicare ID, your Social Security, government issued ID, voted down. Then the Democrats said, all right. Let's allow these polling places, not the polling places, the registration places, the places that issue these photo IDs, let them be open evenings and weekends. Because a lot of the working poor cannot leave their 9-to-5 job to get a right to vote, to get that voter ID rejected by the Texas legislature. And finally, they said, well, then let's at least allow provisional ballots. You should be able to go in your provisional ballot on election day without voter ID, cast your right to vote provisionally, and later prove who you are. They voted that one down, too. So the amendments prove that they weren't trying to make this easy or constitutional. They were literally trying to make it hard.
Right, because the correct answer from the Republicans to the Democrats when they tried all of those amendments, the correct answer from the Republicans would be, you really don't get it, do you?
No, we have a caller on the line. Let's see if that caller wants to join us. Who are you, and welcome to We Act Radio.
Hey, Mark, it's Michael.
Hello, Michael. You have a comment on these voter ID laws.
Voter ID laws or voter ID fraud, because I would call it a fraud by the Republicans. As you have stated, and many other progressives have stated, there has never, ever been a case of voter fraud, at least coming from the Democratic side. There's only been one case of voter fraud, and that was on the Republican side, and that was mainly Ann Coulter, who voted twice, three times, four times, in Florida, in various districts, just to get her GOP candidate in.
Really? Ann Coulter admitted to voting more than once? I haven't seen that, because she's...
I didn't know there was an issue with her voting more than once.
Because, she's someone who might say extreme things that not she didn't actually do. But I'm going to look into that, Michael, because I haven't heard...
I noticed something else, Mark.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be pretty general, but it gives everyone something to think about. You notice that every single stinking time... these Republicans accuse Democrats of doing something. A, we find out it's a lie, and they keep saying, oh, it's happened before, it's happened before, it's happened before. Or guess what? It has happened before, but it wasn't the Democrats committing the so-called crime that the Republicans are doing. It was they themselves. They commit the crimes, and they point the fingers to the Democrats, be it voter fraud, be it gun issues.
I know of a couple examples. One recently where a guy basically collected voter registration forms in minority areas for people who he thought were likely to vote for Democrats, and then he threw them away in the trash. And interestingly, he was prosecuted. I think it was right here in Virginia. He was prosecuted, but never convicted. They never took that in. There are other cases. I think it was in New Hampshire where they shot out the tires of all the cars that were going to go do the get out the vote effort. So there's a lot of shenanigans. Certainly that are being done. But the heart of what I'm saying is this. I'm all for prohibiting voting shenanigans from wherever they come from. If Democrats do them, Republicans do them. These laws, the only thing that they're claimed to prohibit is in-person voting fraud, which is extremely rare in America. There was a study done since 2000 of cases of in-person voting fraud throughout the United States since 2000, last 13 years, and that's, three presidential elections, several local, thousands of local elections, and so forth, and there were 10 cases. So none of this ever affects an election. The Republicans want to disenfranchise millions of voters because they claim it will stop arguably 10 people nationwide and it won't even influence an election. And those people go to jail for 5 years.
The truth of the matter is this. But they can't possibly say the real reason. They have to say something. Whether they say it's voter fraud, whether they say it's to stop unicorns from trampling people, to stop aliens from taking our bodies over, like the invasion of the body snatchers, regardless of what they say, the reality is, and we all know this, they can't say the real reason. So they have to make up something that sounds good. It's the difference between reasons that sound good and good sound reasons.
There you go.
Good sound reasons, so they use reasons that sound good. And I think we actually do a disservice when we even discuss voter fraud as though it had anything to do with it.
Well, I think you've got to respond to their BS. I don't. Obviously, it's BS, but I think that if you let it go unresponded to, then some people believe it. I mean, I guarantee you, as I said, I'm going to be on Fox News in 45 minutes. Y'all can turn it on, and I'm going to be discussing this exact issue, what's going on in Texas. And I guarantee you, I would bet dollars to donuts, as they say, I'll bet anything, that my Republican counterpart is going to go on and on and on about voting fraud, and you need an ID to get in an airplane, and why don't you need an ID to vote? And to which point I'll remind him that, getting in an airplane is not a constitutional right, and poor people often don't fly maybe as much as you do. And number three, and I just found this out very interestingly, actually you don't need a photo ID to get an airplane. Did you know that? If you're in an airplane and you don't have your driver's license with you, you can actually prove your identity through other methods. They give you like a credit check, and you can actually get on a plane. I just learned this. It's at the TSA website. So that'll surprise them. I'm going to throw that out in Fox if they bring that up. Go ahead, Michael. You've been wanting to talk for a while. Go ahead.
Yes. Since you're going to be on Fox, can you take down these important points and shove it in? I don't want to say shove it in.
I'll try. They don't give me a lot of time, but I'm listening, Michael. Go ahead.
Okay. Here's one point. Number one, when it comes to these voter frauds, they say they want to eliminate voter laws, I should say, when they want to eliminate voter fraud, and it's to be administered or enforced equally. I need to stress to you that when they tried to pass these laws, when they passed it initially and then later was blocked by federal judges,
right,
when it came to the Republican primaries, those voter laws were never, ever enforced. No one was ever forced on the Republican side to produce any ID. So let's get that straight and let's cut the crap.
I don't know that I have evidence of that to say on Fox, but I'll tell you what, Michael, post on my Facebook site all the time on the Mark Levine fan page. Give me some evidence of that because I haven't seen that particular point. And I don't want to cite a point that I don't have evidence for on Fox News.
But here's the second point.
All right.
This is what comes down to simple common sense. We have it here in New York City. You go to vote, you sign your name underneath your signature from the previous time that you voted. The person that's working the election boards, he or she sees the signatures match, so everything's legit.
That's right.
If the signature did not match, then they would have every right to challenge the vote and ask for an explanation, investigation. If you broke your arm or something, then they just need to see the ID or whatever. You know, they ain't just going to let the person go. But, you know, come on. A person's signature, unless that person sustained an injury that affects his writing, it's not going to change.
That's actually a good point, Michael, because some of the people who have been forbidden from voting because they don't have voter IDs, some of them, particularly the elderly, they voted for 30, 40, 50 years. They have the exact same signature, like this black woman I talked about in Texas who's born of a midwife back before blacks were allowed in hospitals. She has no birth certificate. It doesn't exist for her, but she's voted for 40 years. She's lived in that county for 40 years, and now she can't vote. They're taking away her right to vote. So the signature is a good point. It's a great way to prove you are who you say you are. Real quick, Michael, then I got to move on.
S-C-A-M, scam.
There you go.
Yeah. And my point I would make.
Thank you for your call, Michael. I always appreciate you calling. Go ahead, Grong.
The point I would make, if somebody is arguing they're doing this for voter fraud, I'd say there are two issues. Their intent. Your intent. Your reason for doing this is to stop voter fraud. But what actually are you doing? What you're doing is you're passing laws that will be extremely discriminatory against certain particular groups of people. Regardless of what your intent is, can't we at least agree that you are passing laws that are going to discriminate against people? So that is your intent. I can't say what your intent is. I may intend all kinds of things, but there are things called unintended consequences, and I can't say whether these consequences are or aren't unintended. But we can agree that the consequences of your intended action, whether the consequences are intended or not, are you're going to disenfranchise people who would otherwise vote for the other guy.
And, Garland, you're absolutely right that, for example, Section 3 of the Voting Rights Act specifically says that either if you intend to discriminate or it has the effect of discrimination, either way, the practices can be banned. But I should point out that Texas was so egregious that unanimously the federal courts have found, including the Bush judges who are a majority on the panel, all found that Texas deliberately used race consciousness to draw its lines and its voter ID law. So they found that Texas was deliberately discriminating. You don't have to take my word for it. Take the word of these federal judges appointed by George W. Bush. They all unanimously found it true. So intent may be hard to prove, but in this case, they've proven it. I want to bring up one more point, if I could.
Well, I was just going to say, in a debate, in an independent debate or an independent discussion where you absolutely can't prove intent, there's no point in proving intent because then you just simply argue this is what you're doing. So you don't intend to do it. I can't prove that you intend to do it. But we can certainly agree that the outcome is discriminatory against people who wouldn't vote for you. And you expect me to believe that you're doing something that's going to tremendously benefit you at the voting booth, but that's not the intent. What kind of a sucker do you take me for?
Exactly. So now I want to bring up one more thing.
I would argue. Go ahead.
I want to bring up one more thing. One of the sort of most notorious aspects of the Constitution, of the original Constitution before the Civil Rights Amendment, that African Americans and frankly all fair-minded Americans complain about, is what was called the Three-Fifths Clause. And the Three-Fifths Clause, which was in the original Constitution of 1787, said that basically the northern states, the states without slaves, got to count all the people in their state for purposes of determining congressional representation. But the South and states that had slaves counted white persons and 3/5 of all other persons. What that meant was is that the South actually got more representation than the North because the South wasn't letting their slaves vote. They weren't letting black people vote. So they actually, because if you compare the white populations, the South got 1 3/5 because they got to count the slaves that didn't vote. They got more representation than otherwise. The only thing worse and more racist than the 3/5 clause would be if the South completely, and this is what they did from 1860s to 1960s, if they completely disenfranchised their black population, because then they get a whole vote, not 3/5, they get a whole vote representation for people that they're not letting vote in Congress for 100 years. Now, here's a part of the 14th Amendment that very few people know about. Section 2 of the 14th Amendment says that you can reduce the representation in Congress of any state that does not allow all of its inhabitants of 18 years or older to vote. So we can actually say to Texas and North Carolina, you know what? You're going to lose 5 congressional seats because you're being openly racist and preventing 5 to 10%, or in some studies show up to 18% of the Texas population from voting. If 18% can't vote, then guess what, Texas? You're going to lose 1/6, 1/5 of your seats in Congress. That would wake them up. It's under the Constitution. It doesn't even require the Voting Rights Act. And I think that is the next place to if Eric Holder were to lose his lawsuit, he should sue under the 14th Amendment and use this provision. Did you know about this provision, Garland?
No, but I think that's good. But Mark, I guess you got to be running, and I'm definitely going to turn on Fox News so I can see it.
Please do. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Garland. I'm going to take a quick break. Then when I come back, I'll just quickly announce what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to go on and let you talk for the last few minutes or so and end the show. All right? So stick around with me, Garland. Like I said, I'll be back right after this break briefly. And then what I plan to do is I'm going to run out a little bit early because I got to get to Fox News and be on the air at 1:30 to defend the right of people to vote. And then after you hear Garland close out the show, we're going to play a couple of inside scoops that you haven't heard before. This is I did with Leslie Marshall. They're on everything from the Trayvon Martin case to gay rights to these voting rights to Detroit, everything else. You're going to hear brand new inside scoop. It won't be me live, but you're going to hear this, me talking with Leslie Marshall right after Garland closes the Raucous Caucus. So this is Mark Levine and Garland Nixon. We'll be right back after this very short break. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine. I still have Garland Nixon. Is that right?
Yes, you certainly do.
Okay, terrific. All right, I'm going to head out now because I'm going to be on Fox News at 1:30 to fight Texas's Jim Crow laws and encourage them to give everyone the right to vote. Garland's going to finish out the Raucous Caucus. When he is done, you're going to hear a little musical break, and then we're going to play the Inside Scoop. We still got 2 hours of the Inside Scoop, a great show I did with Leslie Marshall on everything from Detroit to gay rights to Trayvon Martin. You won't want to miss it, and that will go as soon as Garland finishes his final words right here on the Raucous Caucus. Take it away, Garland.
Thank you, Mark. I think the point that Mark and I are making is that overall, the attempt by the right wing in America now to seize power when, in fact, it is losing power, not just as a result of demographic changes, but also, more importantly, as a result of its policies, is blatant, and that we need to call it what it is, and we need to fight it because it's really bad news. But